You're listening to Bad Trip, the true crime and other weird shit podcast where two sisters take you on a wild ride through some of the world's most fucked up places. Each episode, we journey to a new location and explore its sordid past, creepiest urban legends, and landmarks you won't find in the guidebooks. So buckle up, because it's about to be a bad trip.
We interrupt this program because the civil authorities have issued a contagious disease warning.
911, where is your emergency?
The U.S. Navy has finally acknowledged that videos appearing to show UFOs flying through the air are real.
Initially, many thought the pops they heard were fireworks associated with the show, but soon it became obvious that this was an attack.
Hello, everybody.
Hello, and welcome back to Bad Trip.
We're on episode 26, so we're old.
Yeah, we're old. We're my age.
We're in Idaho this week. Oh, by the way, I'm Shauna.
Oh, yeah, I'm Taylor.
And we're on to a new state. Where were we? We were in Oregon. I can't keep track, man.
Oh, my God. Where were we? We were in... That sounded so good together. I just like the flow of that.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, so we were in Oregon for the past few weeks, and now we're moving to Idaho, the beautiful state that is not Iowa. They're different.
They are different. Shauna has learned over the last week.
Mm-hmm. I've educated myself. So in today's episode, I'm going to be telling you some background on the state of Idaho, and then Taylor will be telling us a sad true crime story. Yes.
Yes, very sad.
But before we get into it, I'd like to give a little disclaimer. So obviously, this is a true crime podcast. We talk about kind of some funny crimes sometimes, some dark crimes, some things that are totally unrelated to crime. So we're a little bit all over the place. We like to, you know, make jokes. We try to be very respectful of victims and of the families of victims. But, you know, we're going to talk shit. We're going to swear. We're going to just like be goons. So if you're not into that, you know, that's cool. But this is not the podcast for you.
If you don't want to listen to a couple of goons, you better find something else.
Yeah.
I love it.
Go to a goon-free zone.
Yeah, don't watch the Goonies. Do the Truffle Shuffle.
Oh my God, I hate that movie.
Are you? Oh, I know that about you. I don't like that about you.
Okay. Should we just start talking about Idaho now?
Yeah, tell me things. I want to know about potatoes.
Okay, that's like really the main topic I'll be talking about though.
Love it. You know I'm a mashed potato connoisseur.
Oh yeah, Taylor has a whole plan. Like if she gets married at her wedding, there's going to be a potato bar. It's going to be a whole thing.
It's a whole thing.
Okay, so... Idaho. Idaho is nicknamed the Gem State, and it is in the Pacific Northwest. It borders Oregon and Washington to the west, Nevada and Utah to the south, Montana and Wyoming to the east, and Canada to the north, but just barely.
Yeah. Well, also, Montana, I learned in my research, is misleading because it's north and east. It's on the, like, dip.
Yeah, so basically like the shape, if you look at Idaho on the map, it's like a box with a squiggly panhandle sticking up out of it. They call it the panhandle. And the edge of that is the border of Canada. So it's only like 45 miles wide where it borders.
Oh my gosh, that's crazy.
Yeah. So the state is very mountainous and wildernessy. I know that's a new word. The Rocky Mountains sprawl across the state, and on average, Idaho sits 5,000 feet above sea level, which for reference is like the same elevation as Denver, Colorado.
I will never understand sea level. I will never get it.
But you know, they call Denver the mile high city, and it's high and your ears will pop. So basically same vibe in Idaho.
Okay, you're just like tall.
You're tall, yeah.
You're really tall.
You grow in height when you go there.
Like 5,000 feet.
Mm-hmm. 5,000 feet closer to God.
Those growth spurts are gonna hurt.
Yeah. So 40% of Ohio's land is national forest. Did I say Ohio? What is wrong with me?
A lot.
40% of Idaho's land is national forest, and that's the highest percentage of any U.S. state. And that's probably one of the reasons that Idaho is so sparsely populated. It has a population of about 1.7 million people, which, if you'll recall from our New York episode, is about the same as the population of Manhattan.
Whoa, that's crazy.
Yes.
Holy cow, compared to its size, also 40% of national forests, you said? That's a fuck ton.
Yeah, yeah. It's
Wow, I had no idea.
Yeah, it's a lot of like protected land, which is cool.
Yeah, I think in my head, Idaho, its land was the outside of a potato with like sprouts and stuff.
Yeah, I see that. That's kind of the vibe I had too.
Yeah, but I did like also learn in my research and what you're telling us that there's so many trees.
So many trees, so many mountains.
Mm-hmm.
So in the 2020 election, Donald Trump got nearly twice as many votes as Biden did in Idaho. So yikes.
Hey, you stupid fucks. Other than the people that didn't vote for Trump.
That's not going to be a surprise when you find out that Idaho is aggressively Caucasian. Like 91% of the population is white.
Ooh.
Super white.
91% shouldn't ever be white anywhere.
That's a lot of, I mean, yeah. Less than 1% of Idahoans are black and just over 1% are indigenous. And 1 in 5 are Mormon.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I guess you said it's close to Utah, right?
Yes.
So yeah, I guess that makes more sense. But oh my God.
Yeah, so it's not very racially diverse.
Ugh.
So the early evidence of humans in the area were arrowheads that date back to like 14,500 years ago.
Malfunction.
Oh my God, I know, I can't fathom that many years. So that makes them some of the oldest artifacts found in North America.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like they got to Idaho pretty late in the game. They had to travel all that way.
So there's like this new theory as of like 2019. And look, I'm not going to pretend I know what the hell I'm talking about. I don't. But basically, they believe that people from Asia, you know how they thought they came across the Great Bering Strait into like...
Yeah. That's my favorite fact about history.
Okay, whatever. So now they think that maybe some people came via boat from like Japan. And they went in some like little inlet with like a river and then they like whooped down into Idaho.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, okay. You know, that's my very educated perspective.
It made more sense to me than any article on Google would probably.
Okay. So I'm like all over the place with the intro, but I'm just going to throw more facts at you.
Love it.
So the name Idaho literally has no real meaning. In the 1860s, before it was a state, some politician was like, yo, we should call this area Idaho because that's the Shoshone term for gem of the mountains. But it turns out that was just complete and utter bullshit.
It really wasn't that term?
No, he just did that for like marketing.
That's like people that get like grace or like love tattooed on them in Chinese. And then it really means like cornucopia.
Oh my God, yeah. Or like how Ariana Grande tried to get 7 rings tattooed on her because it's the name of one of her songs. And it ended up being like a barbecue.
What?
Yeah, something like that.
It looked like a barbecue?
No, it ended up saying barbecue.
Oh, she got the word seven, the words.
In I believe Chinese, I'm not sure.
I was picturing literally 7 circles on her.
Oh, no,
in,
no,
like,
no.
Tattoos. I was like, and then it looked like a grill with like a fat T-bone?
No.
I was amazed.
No, but I like the way your brain works. Okay, so he said it meant gem of the mountains and that was a lie. He later claimed that it was actually named after a little girl named Ida, which is kind of fucking creepy, but also may or may not be true.
If it's not your daughter, it's creepy.
Yeah, there's like some whole story behind it, but I just couldn't be bothered.
No, don't waste your time.
All right. So the capital is Boise, which is not pronounced Boise, as
what?
I thought. Yeah, apparently that is like a big, pretty much everyone gets it wrong unless they're from there. They say Boise, but it's Boise.
Boise.
It is the biggest city in Idaho, the only city with over 100,000 people. And something interesting that I found is that it has a significant Basque population that's lived there since like the late 1800s. And do you know who Basque people are?
I do not.
So they come from like southern France and northern Spain, and they speak their own language in addition to Spanish. So
ooh.
Most of them are in Spain and they're mostly bilingual.
So sorry, that's like a... just like a culture?
Yeah. Yeah. So it's like a group of people. It's like a political issue. Some people want to be independent. It's like a whole thing.
Okay.
So Basque culture is still an important part of Boise culture. So we're talking like they have paella restaurants, Basque wine, and then they have traditional dance groups. So they'll have like cultural performances and just it's like a big thing there.
That's really cool. It weirds me out, the stuff that it doesn't, but just like the shit we should have learned in school is like stuff about this. You know what I mean? Like learn about other cultures and other places across the country and not just like, this is the war and here are all these lies about it.
I mean, yeah, it's like a very small group of people.
Well, yeah, but I know just in general.
Yeah.
Like why? I didn't know about anything like that growing up.
I mean, no, we didn't. We learned kind of just a bunch of nonsense.
Yeah.
So this picture, which you guys can see if you want to check out our website, badtrippod.com, and go to our episode guide or our Instagram at badtrippod, you can see these photos. This one here are some Basque dancers doing traditional dance in traditional clothing. And these are people who live in Boise. It's like the group that is there.
Okay, this is cool. It kind of reminds me, like, outfit wise, not what they're doing, but outfit wise, like midsummer, kind of, because they're in a field and they're all holding hands and dancing around in like white, and the women are in dresses and they have like, you know, head dressings on,
like bonnets.
Yeah, it's really cute though. I mean, they look like they're having a good time.
Yeah.
I want to go.
I really want to go. Okay, I know it sounds crazy, especially because there's all these white people, but also we're white. But I want to go to Idaho after this, not after that intro, but you'll see why in a minute.
Oh, okay.
I want you to guess something. I think you're going to know the answer. If not, we should just quit now.
Oh my God, I hate this. I hate guessing.
No pressure.
Ew.
Okay, what do you think the official state vegetable of Idaho is?
A sweet potato.
No, just potato.
I know, I was just being a dick.
Okay. Well, let's quit now.
Let's quit.
No, so we're going to talk now about potatoes.
I love this.
It's pretty much just potatoes from here on out.
Okay.
1/3 of the potatoes grown in the U.S. come from Idaho. And I think if you ask most Americans like what they know about Idaho, they would probably just say potatoes, because that's all most of us really know.
Literally.
First of all, they take potatoes very, very seriously. So much so that in 1937, the state established the Idaho Potato Commission, which is a government agency responsible for promoting Idaho potatoes and protecting the famous Grown in Idaho trademark.
A government agency?
Yeah, like I think Wisconsin probably has one for cheese, you know, or dairy.
Wow.
So
I love that, actually.
Yeah, so according to them, Idaho potatoes are superior because Idaho has, quote, ideal growing conditions, including rich volcanic soil. And also a good climate for growing delicious potatoes.
I concur.
So they say that they end up containing less moisture and they have a lighter, fluffier texture. So I don't know. That could just be marketing. I don't know.
Probably not. I mean, like,
I mean, I guess they're grown there for a reason.
Yeah. Ida potato.
Excuse me?
I feel like that should be the name of it. Ida potato. And that's why it fits so well. Like, it makes sense that potatoes come from there, because Ida potato.
I don't understand what you're trying to say. Utah potato.
Whatever. Next.
Okay, so now let's take a little potato tour of Boise. All of the stops on this little mini potato road trip come from articles by a woman named Sophie Claire Huller from Insider. She writes for Insider.
Okay.
So shout out to her, but also I'm jealous that she got to experience all these places.
I know. I was like, wait, where do I get this job?
Lately, she's been writing a lot about, like, she's not traveling because of the pandemic, it seems like. So I'm like, I wanted to know what other potatoes I could eat, you know?
Well, she's probably just writing about, like, today in my living room, this is what I saw.
I want her to give me more potatoes.
Sorry.
Ooh, okay. So first, let's talk about the Big Idaho Potato Hotel.
Wow, I love that.
In Boise, you can stay at a potato-shaped Airbnb that is a little over 300 square feet and sits on 400 acres of farmland. I'm going to read you an abridged version of the description from Airbnb, and then I'll show you some photos.
Okay.
If you love the fluffy feeling you get when you eat Idaho potatoes, you'll love staying in a giant potato turned cozy grown-up getaway for two. Recycled from the Ohio...
Oh, motherfucker! The worst.
Recycled from the Idaho Potato Commission's Big Idaho Potato Tour, this 6-ton potato has traveled on the back of a semi to 48 states for 7 years. This hotel has been meticulously designed to allow for stylish private comfort. There's also a customized silo turned into a spa retreat, perfect for soaking while looking up at the stars. For an extra dose of cuteness, the Big Idaho Potato Hotel comes with the cutest Jersey cow in the world who will be your fuzzy pet for your stay.
There's a cow in your hotel room or in your Airbnb?
Not inside, but like right next to it in a fenced-in area.
Aw, cute! Sign me up! But like the thing is, at the spa, I want my feet in warm mashed potatoes.
I think you'll have to bring your own, but I'm sure we can make that happen.
You have to bring your own? I mean, that's a ripoff. Oh my God, the cow.
Okay, yeah. So check out these pictures. The cow's name is Dolly.
Oh my God, I am shook. It's literally like a baked potato on its side. I didn't picture it like that.
Yeah, so when I said that they took this to 48 states, they like had it on the back of a truck and it was like a big marketing like PR thing, kind of like the Oscar Mayer Wiener mobile or whatever.
Yeah. Wow. Okay, the cow's name is Dolly. She's like a light brown, kind of orangish color. And there's a girl just like petting her face and she's enjoying the sun and like looking up and oh, just her chin.
Just snuggling.
Mm, and then the inside of the potato is just beautiful. It's like clean, crisp, and like classic. And Christopher, we're going here. So just so you know,
it's super cute.
That's like, this is the first place I'm going.
Yes. Okay. So that's stop number one. Now, stop number two is the West Side Drive-In. The West Side Drive-In is a ridiculously cute pastel colored diner drive-in and dive.
Mm.
No, but for real, like it was featured on Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives.
Oh, okay.
And Guy Fieri.
Blah.
He's a fan. They are very famous for what they call Chef Lou's world famous Idaho ice cream potato.
Mmm, what is this? I can't even imagine.
So fortunately, it's not a potato with ice cream. It's actually ice cream that's been disguised as a potato. So I'm going to show you a picture.
Okay. Oh, that's cute. I like that.
At first, I really thought it was a potato on top of ice cream or whatever. I was just so perplexed.
That's funny. Yeah, I like wouldn't want to eat it, but it looks cool.
I would eat it. So basically, it's just the potato itself is made of vanilla ice cream dusted in cocoa powder.
Mm.
So that's what gives it that potato-y vibe.
Love it.
And then it's topped with whipped cream, peanuts, crushed Oreos, and chocolate sauce.
Wowza.
Yes. And it got so iconic and famous that people started copying it. So like Martha Stewart made her own version. And you can even buy prepackaged ice cream potatoes from the grocery store.
Whoa, like only in Idaho around that like area probably?
Probably. But yeah, the original is here at West Side Drive-In.
All right. Chef Lou, good job. Very, very inventive.
Yeah, he said he's been perfecting it for 40 years.
Wow, Martha Stewart, you bitch.
I'm sure she gave him credit. Well, I'm not sure.
I was like, are you sure?
I'm not.
She's done worse. No, I'm just kidding. I don't care.
Like, who wouldn't insider trade if they could?
I know. I'm like, what does that even mean? I don't care.
For legal reasons, that's a joke. I would never insider trade. All right. So our final stop on the potato tour of Boise is Boise Fry Company. And you'll notice that I put the ice cream first and the fries second because that's the order in which I believe you should eat food.
Okay.
Dessert first.
Mm.
So this is going to make me really hungry, so I'm almost regretting including it, but oh well.
I mean, we have to eat fries after this.
Do we have any? I don't think so. We might have to like DoorDash some or something.
Oh my God.
Okay, so this place looks like a French fry lover's dream come true. They have 5 locations in the Boise area and their slogan is burgers on the side.
Oh yeah, that's what I'm here for.
Mm-hmm. So they offer 6 different kinds of potatoes, including Yukon, yam, and sweet potatoes. And you can also apparently get fries made out of Brussels sprouts, but I don't really know how that works.
I'm here for that.
Yeah, I'm intrigued.
I want to try that.
They also have 5 cuts of fries, so you can pick, you know, whatever kind of potato you want.
That's my dream because I hate thick potatoes. I hate it.
Oh, well, you could get shoestring potatoes.
Well, no, that's too thin.
You could get curly fries.
I like that.
You could get regular, whatever. They have different kinds.
Okay, I like that.
They also have 9 sauces.
Oh my God, can I say, give me all of them?
You probably could, I don't know, but some of it is like the stuff you'd expect. They have like aioli, ketchup, mustard. And then they also have some weird things like blueberry ketchup and marshmallow.
Ooh, but people probably like that with sweet potato fries. And
yeah, it's probably like marshmallow fluff.
Yeah.
So this is a photo here of the 6. It's 6 different kinds of potatoes. I don't know how the cuts work, whatever.
I am drooling. They're so crispy and good.
I know. I just want to like inhale a bunch of them right now.
I almost want this to be the cover photo for the episode because just like yum, but not really.
All right. And now we have one more fun potato attraction. This is not quite a place, but it's an event.
Mm.
This is the Idaho Potato Drop. Every New Year's Eve since 2013, tens of thousands of, quote, spectators.
Uh-huh.
They have met in downtown Boise to watch the Idaho Potato Drop at midnight.
Okay.
It is a big event with live music and food and fireworks and like other kinds of performances. And it honestly looks like a lot of fun, like a big sort of like fair almost.
Ooh, yeah.
Or carnival or whatever. But this year, because of COVID, they did it in a secluded location and they live streamed it so people could watch from home.
Hey guys, look at us ride these roller coasters. Woo!
No, they don't have that, but it was like they still had performances and stuff.
Well, that is cool. It's like Ryan Seacrest eating funnel cake.
Essentially.
Potato funnel cake.
So the potato, which they call the glow-tato because it glows, is 16 feet long and weighs 2,000 pounds.
Me too.
So it's not quite as big as the potato hotel, but it's still chonky.
But they could carve that one out and make a mini hotel, I bet. Like a tiny house.
They could. Like, you could fit in there.
Oh, yeah. You could put a cot in there and a little latrine.
A latrine. Oh, my God.
Cut it out.
Yeah, so that's a photo of the glow-tato. And here's a photo of the potato drop 2020. So you can see, like, fireworks. The 2020 was supposed to explode, but it didn't work.
Oh my gosh. Like, literally, that's the only thing that didn't explode in 2020.
Oh my God. Amen.
That's the fucking best. And the fact that I've been missing out on this and I've been watching stupid peach drops and like disco ball drops for years is disappointing.
I know. Now you know.
Every year I'm going to eat fries and watch this potato drop.
I love it. It's a new tradition.
Yes.
KTVB 7 News quoted the Idaho Potato Drop CEO, Dylan Klein, as saying, "Over the years, there have been tater haters and naysayers saying that dropping a potato represents Idaho in some sort of negative light. But we're taking this opportunity to do things right. Persevere. Do it in a safe way and show the world what a strong, healthy community really can do when they come together." And that was about 2020.
People are so lame.
Don't be a tater hater.
Like, why are they? I don't think it's painting Idaho in a negative light at all, you goons.
It's probably something he made up for marketing purposes.
No, not everything is marketing. People are really that insane.
That's true, but also everything's marketing. Okay, so last but not least, these are the names of some real towns in Idaho that I would like to close this out on.
Okay.
Before we move on to your story. We've got Dingle, Crouch, Beer Bottle Crossing.
Love.
Good Grief.
Same.
Dick Shooter.
What?
Named after a man named Richard Shooter.
Oh, come on.
I know. We've got Slick Poo.
I hate that.
The String.
I hate that.
I love The String.
I hate that so much.
And then finally, Warm River, which is the smallest city in Iowa. God damn it, Idaho. Smallest city in Idaho with a population of 3 in the last census.
That is one family, maybe? Or do you think it's a couple and then a single? Or do you think it's 3 singles?
I don't know. Maybe it's like 3 roomies.
I like that thought. Okay, wow. That's a lot of weird town names.
Yeah. So Idaho honestly sounds like a cool place to visit.
Yeah, it does. It's like one of those that's super under the radar. But then you go there and you're like, oh my God.
I would like to also apologize for the number of times I said Idaho wrong when I said Ohio and Iowa and probably other things that I didn't even notice.
Probably a lot, but it's okay. You know, you tried and you fixed it and you're learning.
Yeah. Watch, I probably said it like 10 times. I didn't even notice and I didn't fix it.
I probably didn't notice either. I was just thinking about eating fries. So. Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's take a little break and then we'll get to your story.
Yeah. We have returned.
We have. And now all the fun potato stuff is over and we're going to get to some depressing shit.
Super depressing. So, you know, if you need a drink, if you're not driving, just like go ahead and have a drink of choice next to you. Maybe a refill as well.
If you are driving, get a drink of choice that's not alcoholic, such as something from Dunkin' Donuts. I do recommend that.
We do love Dunkin'. Also, I've been really drinking a lot of citrus green tea lately and I've been loving that.
I've never really enjoyed citrus green tea. I just like regular green tea.
Well, it's like the iced kind.
Oh.
It's cold.
Fancy.
It's so fancy. I get it from the gas station in a bottle for like $1.60.
I like unsweetened green tea and I like that it leaves your mouth kind of dry and it's like weird.
I do like that too. Oh, yum. Now I want tea. Why are we talking about so much food and delicious drinks in this episode?
I don't know.
Okay, well, moving on. Bring the mood down.
Let's do it.
All right. So first things first, we are going to start adding content warnings for each episode going forward in the episode descriptions. That way, if you want to check out kind of what we're going to hit on, like the rough topics in each episode, you can look and just decide if you want to listen or even just listen to the beginning part and not the story, you know, just so you have an idea.
Yeah, but we wanted to put those there so you can kind of make that decision, but also so we didn't say it in the episode and maybe, you know, give away the ending to stories or something like that. So you can choose whether or not you want to read that.
Yes, and it'll be like at the bottom. So don't worry. Still read the descriptions. They're so funny.
Oh my God, hilarious.
Shauna actually like really makes me laugh sometimes.
Thank you.
Also, before my story, I want to say that I know we like to do cases that haven't really been covered by any of the popular podcasts that everyone, you know, mostly listens to. And this one has been covered by a podcast you might have heard of. Something like Slime Monkey. But I really wanted to tell you about this case myself. So I didn't listen to their episode because I wanted to make sure that all of my information was correct and properly cited.
Oh my God.
So if you like, you can check out all of our sources on our episode guide at badtrippod.com.
Subtle.
Oh my gosh. All right. So now I'm really ready to tell you if you're ready to hear it.
I'm as ready as I'll ever be.
Okay. Dior J. Coons Jr. was born in Idaho Falls, Idaho on December 30th, 2012 to Jessica Mitchell and Vernal Dior Coons Sr.
Those are some names.
I know. So to make it easier, I'm going to call Dior Jr., the baby, just Dior, and I'm going to call his dad Vernal, because that was really his first name.
Okay.
Dior ended up quickly getting the nickname Little Man in his family. So I'm just going to show you the family real quick so you can have an idea of who I'm talking about when I start telling you the story.
Okay, so this is Dior. He's a cute little toddler, a little blondie boy.
A blondie boy.
Next, we have Jessica Mitchell and Dior. She's young. She's very young. She probably looks like early 20s. Maybe. I don't know. I'm terrible telling how old people are. She has brown hair. She just looks super normal, smiley. She looks super happy in all these pictures. And then Dior also, that's like a cute name. The more I say that, the more I like it.
I know. I like it. Look at the picture in the bottom. Look at how he looks up at his mom. I think it's like, that's my favorite one.
Oh, where his eyes are up into the side.
Yeah, like, it's so cute. He's just cute. Like adored by her.
Dior'd by her.
He's Dior'd by her. Oh my God.
And then here we have Vernal Dior. He panicked. Coons?
Yeah.
Senior. With his son. And again, just like a 20-something white guy. He's a very cute little toddler. I just want to pinch his little chubby cheeks.
I know, he's so cute. On July 10th, 2015, Dior was two at this time. The parents decided to take a last-minute family fishing and camping trip to Timber Creek Campground in Ledor, Idaho, which is northeastern Idaho near the border of Montana.
Okay.
Which I was like, who knew Montana was there? Who put that there?
That whole little corner of the country, with all the square states, is where I really get confused.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot to learn. It's a lot to ask for. Jessica's grandfather, Robert Bob Walton, and his friend, Isaac Renwand, joined them for the trip as well.
Okay.
So it was four adults and then Dior. When they got to their campsite, Dior helped his parents set up chairs by the fire pit and get things ready for the day. Bob Walton, who is Dior's great-grandfather, went to the trailer to relax, leaving the door open, and Isaac went to a nearby stream to go fishing. When the trio finished up their tasks, Jessica shouted to her grandfather in the trailer that they were leaving Dior behind while they went and explored the area. They were, I guess, going to go find where Isaac was fishing and kind of see what was around.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, Walton said he never heard Jessica's call and was unaware he was supposed to be the one responsible for watching Dior.
Oh, no.
So about 30 minutes later, the family would realize that Dior had vanished.
Oh, no. I feel like there's so many stories of little kids who go missing on camping trips specifically.
I know. It's so weird to think about. I'm like, we went camping so much when we were little, and if I knew about this, I would have been like, nah.
We would just like run around at nighttime in the dark. Like, we're so weird.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No. It was like still different times, but like what? Jessica made a call to 911 around 2:30 p.m. At the same time, Vernal was calling to report the disappearance. So they both called at the same time, which, you know, I don't know. Just panic, I guess.
Yeah.
I'm not going to play the 911 call because I know people, and including you, like, don't like those, yeah, and don't get stressed out. Yeah. but I'm like a twisted fuck and I have to listen to 911 calls.
I like to listen to the ones when I know the person calling is guilty of something, when they're like pretending to not be. Because I like to hear their reaction and try to see if like they, if they're good at acting and stuff.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
But I don't like to hear like real...
like a parent in distress.
Yes, exactly.
I like, it's one of those things I have to, I don't know. And like, I have to look at crime scene photos.
Yeah, yeah.
So I just noticed she was mostly calm. Her voice was shaking a bit and she was kind of distracted by her fiance also being on the phone. She was like responding to the 911 operator. Then she would kind of listen to what he was saying and you could hear him in the background a little bit. It wasn't a super long conversation. She was just kind of giving the facts about their location, how long he had been missing, and a description of him and what he was wearing. So really just the basics. She said that he had on cowboy boots and it was reported that they were a size too big on him. So they were really clunky and like slipping off of him all day. And then he was also in blue pajama pants and a camo jacket. And immediately the search was on. So the search resources that were immediately given to the family were helicopters, divers, scanning sonar, scent dogs and cadaver dogs, horses, ATVs, and over 300 people on the ground, grid searching the reservoir, creek, and hillsides.
Wow, they were not fucking around.
No, they weren't.
They did that all right away?
Oh, yeah. Like, that night, a search started.
As they should. Like, they should do this in every case with a missing kid, in my opinion, but a lot of time, obviously, that doesn't happen.
Yeah, I agree. But it's, like, crazy how many things they had. Just, like, different, I don't know, options on how to search for him.
Wow.
All right, I'm going to show you a few more photos just of kind of the area, like what the landscape was like.
Okay, so first here we have the missing persons flyer for Dior. Oh, he's so teeny tiny. He only weighed 28 pounds.
Oh my God, that's so small.
Oh, he was 3 feet tall. He's such a little baby.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my goodness. Oh, such a precious little thing. Okay, well, now I'm looking at some pictures of the campground area and... like, you were not kidding when you said campground. It's like wilderness.
Yeah, it's forest. It's like rough terrain.
Yeah, if you're someone who, like, when you go camping, you're like, you know, surrounded by a bunch of people in a fire pit, like, that's not what this is.
Yeah.
And then, like you said, there's like the reservoir. So obviously there's water right there, which is concerning.
It is concerning. And that was actually something that the 911 operator asked her. She was like, is there water near you? And Jessica was like, yeah.
Oh my gosh. And then there's like an aerial photo too, which just like, yikes, it's rugged.
Mm-hmm.
And as a reminder, you can check these pictures out on our Instagram at Bad Trip Pod, as well as our episode guide. And there's a link in the episode show notes.
Okay, so the way I'm going to tell you like what happened with what went on next is chronologically. So I found a timeline and I kind of broke it down on like just the information I wanted to tell you guys.
Okay.
July of 2015. Remember, he went missing on July 10th was when the 911 call was placed. Crews had been searching the Timber Creek and Stone Reservoir area for 10 days. So the sheriff's office decided to redirect the investigation because they hadn't found anything.
Mm-hmm.
They said they would be keeping a presence in the Timber Creek area to keep searching for clues. And they believed at this time that Dior may have been abducted by strangers or snatched by wild animals. Lemhi County Sheriff Lynn Bowerman said the parents were not suspects in the case. And Jessica and Vernal gave a really heartbreaking message on TV about finding their son just 3 days after he went missing. Like, it went right to my feels. The dad was just tears in his eyes and he was like, I just want him home. And I was like, oh.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I can't watch stuff like that.
It's hard. In August, former Coons family friend and private detective Frank Vilt was brought in to help with the investigation. He was a retired federal marshal who has found and successfully returned 19 missing children to their parents.
Oh my God. And he's just like a family friend?
It was weird. He was like someone that they knew because they ended up at the same like store all the time or something. It was like a weird connection. And then he offered to do the case for free.
I mean, I guess small town Idaho.
Yeah.
That was very nice of him.
Twas nice. He said, I feel that there is a possibility that he is still alive. Other kids have been abducted and located months, sometimes years later. And he was definitely critical of the Lemhi County Sheriff's Office for failing to follow up on potential leads.
Mm.
One lead was from a woman who said she saw a boy matching Dior's description near Caldwell, Idaho, which was like 6.5 hours from the campsite.
Oh, wow.
So it's like a decent amount away. You would think like, let me look into that.
Yeah. So it seems like, you know, most likely it's just another little boy that looks like him, but you still have to follow up on that lead.
Right. She even said that he was with a man in an older model tan Buick with Oklahoma plates. It's like she gave a pretty good description. Someone said later that that was like a false sighting, but you know, it's like you still check it out.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Especially if like you're pulling out all the stops to search in the wilderness, like you can't follow up on leads then.
Yeah. And it's like you should have gone and asked if they had video cameras, you know, if they had like surveillance at all or if any surrounding places did.
Yeah. Ugh, that frustrates me.
Yes. Frank Vilt said, I'm not saying that the Lemhi County Sheriff's Office had tunnel vision, but they should have expanded their search and put out an Amber Alert. But apparently the Amber Alert didn't meet the criteria it needed to meet. I was like, are you fucking kidding me? It's a missing child.
So I always thought like Amber Alert, like you needed a license plate number, but then I found out that wasn't true. So I'm like, what are the criteria?
I don't know, but it said something about missing for 12 hours or something that I read. But I was like, he was missing for 12 hours. So I don't know.
I wonder if it has something to do with like, you have to know that they were taken by someone specifically. I don't know. Who knows? I'm making shit up as usual.
We're just guessing. Totally guessing. Oh, and Vilt agreed with me in my thought. No, I think I got this thought from him that they should have gone and looked for surveillance footage.
Yes. I feel like that's something that in a lot of different cases they fail to do when it seems to me like the most obvious first step. Like, I understand, again, that this is like kind of a long shot, but like it's still a possibility. So
also, yeah, that's the easiest thing to do. Just be like, can I have your surveillance footage? Can you digitally download it and email it to us? And it's like, OK.
Right. Like, why do you have surveillance? Why do you have cameras if you're not going to use them?
It drives me insane.
I just went to just Google real quick about the Amber Alert situation. And you know how Google gives you suggestions based on your recent searches?
Yeah.
So since I've been searching a lot of Idaho stuff, this is the article that came up. In 1914, an Idaho girl was mailed to her grandmother by her parents.
No, by carrier pigeon?
I don't know. So maybe I need to cover this. We'll see how much information there is. Maybe I'll cover it in next episode.
Yeah, that's amazing.
All right. Anyway, that was off topic. Let's get back to this story at hand.
Okay. So only about a month after Vilt made those remarks, he resigned as their private investigator.
Do we know why?
Yes, we do. He accused the parents of lying and misleading him during the duration of his investigation. And in a letter he wrote, quote, sooner or later, the truth will come out. He was also perplexed why they didn't want him to advertise a $20,000 reward in the case, even after he was willing to put up his own personal funds.
Holy shit. Okay, that's shady.
Yeah.
Okay. Ooh. So the police were like, no, we don't think they could have had anything to do with it. But this guy was like, I'm having a feeling some weird stuff's happening.
Yeah. And it's crazy because like he volunteered to do it. And then he was like, never mind, you're guilty.
Yikes. Also, this guy, like, holy cow, he's going to put up 20K of his own money. Like, he just seems like a very good person.
I know. At the end of October, since the environment in the campground had changed so much since they were camping in July, like the colors and the thickness of the foliage and everything. So they were like, let's do another search so we can see if we missed anything. Unfortunately, nothing turned up in the search either.
Mm.
The next month, in November of 2015, private investigator Philip Klein and his company, Klein Investigations and Consulting, was hired by Vernal. So it's their second PI that they had.
Okay, this is getting interesting. Okay. I mean, it was already interesting, but
no, just now. Not long after Dior disappeared, Jessica and Vernal were failing to make payments on their shared apartment, resulting in eviction. And I don't know, did I say they were engaged before?
Yeah.
Okay, so I don't know exactly around what time it was. I was a little confused, but somewhere close to here, pretty soon after he went missing, they broke up the engagement.
Oh.
Yeah, they were still like cordial and supporting each other and friends. And they were just like, I think it was too much. I mean, I don't know what strain that has on a freaking relationship, but
yeah. So they weren't like romantically involved anymore.
Yeah, but they were still, no, not at all. But they were still super in each other's lives.
I mean, yeah, I guess they're looking for their son together. So that makes sense.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, they were evicted. And get this, investigators were given full access to their apartment by the landlord. So they were like, go for it.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is when they discovered the missing camouflage jacket that Dior was supposedly wearing when he went missing.
don't like that.
Mm-hmm. They also found several toy cars that both parents had alleged were with Dior at the time of his disappearance. They said they were in a bag, shoved in another little bag that was shoved in a couch.
Okay, wow.
Like deep in a couch, so that's weird.
This is like, clearly you're trying to hide it, but also it's like, why would you keep them at all?
I know. Okay, but the thing is, these investigations were done by the private investigator, not by the sheriff's office.
Wait, the investigation into the apartment?
Yeah, like when the coat was found and when the toys were found, that was the...
Their own private investigator?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, not the first one, their new one.
Correct.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Also, we know that polygraph tests aren't super accurate, and obviously they're not admissible in court for a reason, but it's in like all the articles, so I didn't want to leave it out. They each had two polygraph tests, and they both failed both.
Okay, wow.
So that's just like, you know, just another little, keep that in the back of your mind.
Yeah, they don't mean nothing. They just don't mean everything.
Exactly. All right, so now it's end of January 2016.
Oh, he would be three now.
Yeah. Sheriff Lynn Bowerman announced that the parents of Dior are now considered the top suspects in the case. The other two men were persons of interest because they were there, but they weren't suspects.
Okay, so the grandpa and the friend.
Yes. Jessica Mitchell and Victor. Who is that? Jessica Mitchell and Vernal Dior Kuntz Sr. had been continuously untruthful since the beginning of the investigation. Their stories about what happened had changed multiple times. The sheriff's office didn't want to jump the gun, though, and make any arrests because they didn't want to end up losing the case eventually due to double jeopardy. So, you know, they wanted to have enough evidence and information to charge the proper people with the proper crime.
Oh, yeah, because you, like, have a right to a speedy trial, so they can't, like, wait around to get more evidence. You have to be ready.
Right, exactly. So, just in case people don't know what double jeopardy is, under the double jeopardy clause of the Fifth Amendment, a person cannot be prosecuted for the same offense twice. So basically, if they were taken to trial and were acquitted and proven not guilty, they couldn't ever go back to trial, even if they got 100% evidence that the parents did it.
Yeah. So not even like proven not guilty, but just acquitted.
Exactly. But plot twist. You can be charged a second time if it's a military court because it's a different entity. So yeah, fun facts to anyone in the military. Remember the cowboy boots that Dior was wearing when he went missing that were too big on him and like slipping off?
Yeah.
And clunky? Well, a lot of people were wondering, including like previous investigators, not just like Facebook users, basically, were wondering why, if he was attacked by an animal or snatched by a person, didn't the boots fall off?
Mm-hmm.
It's weird. Like, if they were falling off when he was literally walking, why wouldn't they have fallen off?
Especially with the animal situation. I can see it with a person, because when you hold a kid, sometimes it's super easy to just, like, you know what I mean? Scoop them up and, like, you have your arm around their legs, like...
Kind of, but I'm also, like, just picking him up, it should have fallen off, you know? I mean, like, it's totally possible that it couldn't have, but it's just interesting.
Yeah.
So, you know, they should have shown up somewhere in, like, one of the searches with all the dogs and stuff like that, you would think. Both families continued to support Dior's mother and father, though. So their whole families were, like, sticking behind him.
Okay.
I read a statement by Alan Browning, the parents' attorney, where he said, Mom, Dad, and little Dior had never met Isaac. This is the grandpa's friend.
Oh, okay.
A man with a significant criminal history. The person who directed Jessica and Dior Sr. where the good fishing was, right before returning to where Dior had been left with his grandfather. So it's interesting. That story is different from what they said happened before.
Is it? It sounds the same to me.
No. Initially, they were going to meet Isaac, who was already fishing. And this time they're saying that he took them there and then left them there and went back to the child.
Oh, I thought they were just saying them. I thought they were implying that he and the grandpa were in on it together.
No. So, yeah, it's like first they were the last ones to have seen him. And then it changed to him being the last one to see him. So it's like that's a big difference. I mean, being the last one to see someone is fucking important.
Yeah.
As far as I can tell, this was one of the stories that changed after Dior's disappearance. So it's just like,
Yeah, that is suspicious.
Yeah. And he did have a criminal record, but he was thoroughly investigated and law enforcement do not believe that he is involved in Dior missing.
Yeah. I'm also like, what kind of criminal record? Like, did he steal something when he was 25?
No, he had like a a rape charge. Oh. And then it was like less into domestic violence. So it's,
yikes. Yeah, so, okay.
It's an aggressive criminal record.
A history of violence. But
yes.
Okay. But still, the police don't think he has anything to do with it.
They don't. In February 2016, about 4 months after he was hired, private investigator Klein was fired by Vernal for expressing his opinions on the case to the public.
Oh my God. So they keep, their investigators keep being like, they did it.
Yes.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. I guess the thing was that Klein refused to meet with Vernal and his attorney to give them his findings. And apparently that was breaking their agreed upon contract of giving all the information to the family first. And he also had a clause that he wasn't supposed to go public with anything he found.
Oh.
So he did break that and he did go to the public. And apparently the statements that he made had caused Jessica to lose her job and both parents to get daily death threats.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Vernal said, "For all this trouble Mr. Klein has caused my family, and after Mr. Klein had been paid $20,000, I have no more information concerning the disappearance than I had on the day Mr. Klein was hired. Mr. Klein, you and your company are fired."
Well, I think he kind of self-fired.
Yeah. Okay, now I'm going to read you some statements that Klein put out.
Okay.
Okay, so the company sent out a press release regarding Dior. Part of it says, "This evening, I have received many calls regarding Sheriff Lynn Bowerman of Lemhi County and his statement to the press. We want to publicly say that we support his statements, and as shared with his department and the U.S. Department of Justice, we believe this case to be an intentional homicide, with the suspects being Vernal Dior Kunst and Jessica Mitchell. We do not make this statement lightly. We make it based upon the facts, timelines, witness statements, and evidence obtained during the course and scope of this case."
Just like the balls you have to commit a murder, to murder your child, and then continuously hire multiple people to try to solve it and think that they're not gonna like catch you? Like,
yeah.
What?
Like, they're private investigators for a reason.
I'm like, who do you think you are?
I don't know. That's the fucking $1 million question. Who do you think you are? Anyone that does these things.
Mm-hmm.
Klein also said that Jessica Mitchell, Dior's mother, told him she knows where the body is on the mountain and that she won't tell investigators.
What the fuck?
But I watched an interview the first time they spoke out, the first time the parents spoke out since he was missing, on video interview with a news station. And when she was asked about that, she was like, "No way." What actually happened was he said, "Where do you think your son is?" And she said, "The last place I saw him was on the mountain." Not that she knows where on the mountain he is. So that was like her side of the story versus his side of the story.
Yeah. Interesting. Also, I'm like, even if they're the ones who did it, like, that still wouldn't explain why he was never found when they did all these extensive searches. You know what I mean?
I know. It's very weird. And that's the thing. It's like, oh, it's so confusing. Okay. So, yeah, like I said, Local News 8 interviewed Vernal and Jessica about his disappearance. And that was in March of 2016. So people have been super judgmental of Jessica because she was already remarried at this point.
And how long has it been? Like, less than a year?
Yeah. So Dior went missing on July 10th, 2015. And this interview was March 2016.
Wow.
So ooh. It's just like, oh, just like. So people have been, you know, obviously judgmental. People are rough. And that's like a bold move to make.
Yeah. I mean, I'm judgmental about that.
Me too. But she said, "It just happened. I wasn't trying to go out and date. I wasn't looking for anyone. I just met someone and they made me happy." And like, I was like, okay, but you could have probably waited a little bit, but that's fine.
Yeah. I mean, I guess fair enough.
To each his own, to each her own, to each their own. Also, in this interview, Vernal said that he was really happy for her. He was like, "I have no hard feelings. I want everyone to be happy. Like, I just want this situation to be over and all of us to feel happiness again." Vernal also moved out of state because first he was helping his father get settled in a new home, and then he met a family who gave him a good job, so he decided to stay there too, near his dad and then working.
So where'd he move to?
I don't know. It didn't say. He said that it was much easier than people interfering in his life constantly, and like, he didn't know what else to do. And people, of course, were judging him too. Like, "You left the place that your son went missing from." And he's like, "I literally couldn't work without like people coming up to me saying like, you killed your kid," and just, you know, harassment constantly.
Yeah. I mean, if you were to assume that like he is innocent. Yeah. I mean, that sucks. And like, you haven't made any progress in almost a year. So what are you going to do?
Right. It's like, it's just horrifying. I can't imagine living like that, especially if you're innocent. and no one actually knows yet. So, bah. Now it's June, and Klein Investigations is still going strong. They're not done looking. They conducted a four-day search using cadaver dogs, which included areas in and around the city of Ledor and Timber Creek Campground. The cadaver dog hit on five different targets, including a site about 3/4 of a mile from the campground.
Ooh, that's very close.
Yeah. According to the Klein report, investigators believe this site may have been a holding site for some type of human body. And they're also moving the timeline of events up to 5 p.m. the day before the 911 call was made, because they know that that's the last time that he was seen by someone other than those four.
Okay.
So I think it was his grandmother that saw him last at 5 p.m.
So if all four of them were in on something, mm-hmm. like theoretically, he could have been dead that night.
Yeah, because like a big theory is like, did they murder him or was it an accidental death that they just got scared and tried to cover up? Very possible that happens more than we think.
Yeah.
Even though Bonneville County or Lemhi County Sheriff's offices didn't actually help conduct the search physically with the Klein investigations, they did work together to help point out potential search locations in the area for the team to continue looking. So they kind of helped direct them where to look, but they didn't have their cadaver dogs or their detectives out there.
Mm-hmm.
Also, around this time, Sheriff Lynn Bowerman, who had been working on the case since it started, actually lost the next election. So Steve Penner was appointed as the new Lemhi County Sheriff.
Okay.
I have a fun photo for you of all the other people that were involved in this situation.
Okay, so we have the two sheriffs and the private investigators. And then, oh, it's interesting. So the grandpa's friend, Isaac, is young.
Yeah, he's much younger.
Oh, wow. Okay. I was imagining like an old guy.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. I guess I didn't even see their ages anywhere, actually.
But I mean, I would say he looks like he's probably in his like late 20s, early 30s. Oh.
Wait, what? Let me see.
He doesn't look like very wrinkly. He looks like he's probably in his 30s or something.
Yeah.
And then the parents are here. Oh, gosh. Wearing like missing shirts with their son's face all over it.
Yeah.
And the grandpa has an old person hat on. He like looks like.
Just a perfect description of an old man.
All these people look exactly how I would imagine people from Idaho to look.
Exactly. They're just like average peeps.
They all look like they carry weapons with them at all times.
They probably do.
I mean, I guess the sheriffs definitely do.
Most of them voted for Trump if you're looking at statistics.
Oh, they all did. Allegedly.
Now it's November. The family sues Philip Klein for comments to the media about the inconsistencies of their stories, the breach of contract, and sued him for slander. So they were just like, here's the whole shebang.
Interesting. I feel like he probably wouldn't have said it if he was not pretty confident, but...
Yeah. But the fact is he did break his contract, the agreement that he made in the contract with the family. So, like, I get it that I'm down for him expressing his feelings, but also it was legally... Like, you're an investigator. You know that was not allowed.
Yeah. I guess, like, I don't know how the law works, but he probably legally could have, like, gone to the police because if he really thought that, like, he could probably turn them in.
I mean, if they had enough solid evidence, they would be arrested. So, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, like, if someone hires you to be their private investigator and they're like, don't tell anyone anything you find, and then you find something that incriminates them, like, I feel like you can still go to the police with that. You probably just shouldn't blast it out to the media.
Right.
That's what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I agree. But he, like, made a press release statement.
No, totally. Yeah.
So it was definitely different. But if he would have done that, you know, that would have been probably a little better for the fam. But fuck it.
It's just, to me, the fact that they thought that a contract could protect them from... anyone ever finding out at all,
yes,
is like so silly to me.
Yeah, I definitely see what you're saying. Like, if you find our son's body and you can tell that we did it, you have a contract. Like,
yeah,
you better not telling us or we'll sue you.
Exactly.
It's like, sue me from prison, assholes. Allegedly,
yes.
In May of 2017, so this is like a couple months later, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children released an age progression photo for Dior of what he might look like then at age 4.
Okay.
So for the next couple of years, there was no news, no charges, and no signs of Dior. April 2019, though, nonprofit organization called Search for Me Foundation takes on the case. It was started in 2012 by licensed PI David Marshburn. Him and his team have worked on many missing person cases and helped solve a couple, too. Their, like, little motto thing is, we answer the silent whisper of the missing, find me.
Oh, yikes. I'm that like, makes me uncomfortable.
Yeah, it gave me the heebs. I was like, oh, can you think of something else? What? So now it's May and a judge throws out the case, Coons versus Klein. So anything between like the Klein investigation and the family, the judge was like, no, none of this is happening.
Wow, that's interesting. So
yeah,
that surprises me.
Mm-hmm. The following are part of the statement made by Klein after the court's decision. First, I would like to thank the district court for their decision. This case has been and always will be about finding the baby Dior Coons. We stand by the evidence today and our comments, which, as the judge said, were important and the public needed to know. So in the statement, Klein said, I would like to remind everyone that there is a missing 2-year-old in Idaho. That is, that was, and that will be the end all in this case. As we will formally withdraw from the case today and this lawsuit dies, we want to remind all of you to think, pray, and keep your eyes open to report anything you know. Justice will come for baby Dior. We know that to be true. My best wishes to the people of Idaho and all LEOs that do the job. We will never, ever forget you, and most especially baby Dior Coons. They will come for you, Dior. They will come for you.
Aww.
I know it's, and he like was like, I'm sad I can't investigate this anymore because he's put so much into it and cared about it. But he's like, maybe it'll happen.
Yeah. Yeah. And now there's other people who are also investigating beyond just the police and beyond just the private investigator. Well, yes. I guess it's another private investigator.
Yes, exactly. Okay, so speaking of him, now it's June 2019, and that guy, Marsh Byrne, from the Search for Me Foundation, was contacted by a Facebook group asking for help. And I'm like, was this the Facebook group I spent hours on?
Probably.
So there's a Facebook page, and it's not run by family members or anyone closely associated with Dior, but they're very passionate about finding out the truth and posting photos of him, like, so much. So if you want to see it, look that up. It was created on January 2nd, 2016, and they have been posting since. It took me literally like an hour to get back to the beginning of the page.
I'm like, where do you find all these photos of him if you never knew him? It's kind of creepy.
Like, I think people submit them and, you know, different, like, people are posting photos of him all over the place. I mean, he's a missing 2-year-old.
Yeah.
And the parents had like a million photos with him, so I'm sure those were public.
Gotcha.
So yeah, the name of that Facebook page is We Want Answers for Dior Coons Jr. So Marsh Byrne brings one of his cadaver dogs to the site. He said, our oldest dog, Kaz, the way he alerts, he lays down. He just lays down on the spot. Now it can be a foot over, a foot here, or a foot in front, but he lays on the strongest scent, or at it. They brought in another cadaver dog the next day, and that dog alerted to the same spot.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Okay. And is this the same spot that they identified, like the other people identified years prior?
It didn't give me a comparison of where Klein said that the cadaver dogs had hit like in multiple spots, 5 different spots. He said that in all those spots, there was possibility of like cerebral fluid or blood or whatever, but it didn't tell me the exact location.
Okay.
So I'm not sure. But these findings caused the Lemhi County Sheriff's Office to close the campground and conduct a complete investigation.
Oh, wow.
A small piece of bone was found near the spot that the cadaver dogs had both hit. And the sample was turned over to the FBI lab, with the results returned to the Lemhi County Sheriff's Office just under a year later. And they concluded that no human DNA was detected.
Damn.
I know.
I just want to say the fact that it took like almost a year to get that back.
Mm-hmm.
And which, look, I understand it's not how it is on TV. I'm just like, you see on like SVU or Criminal Minds or whatever, they'll just like send it to the lab and get it back like, they'll be like, put a rush on it and they'll get it in like 2 hours.
Yeah, it's like, we're going to run to lunch. We'll be right back. And then they know the full ass makeup of the whole tox screen and like the autopsy's fully done and everything. It's like, come on.
Definitely gives me unrealistic expectations.
Yeah. So in May of 2020, family members were notified of the FBI's findings. And Sheriff Penner said that the investigation into the missing child, who would be turning 7 that year, continues. And that was in 2020, so now this year he'd be turning 8, just so you know.
Okay.
He also said that nobody has been charged in his disappearance, but all on the trip are considered persons of interest. So the new sheriff was like, I'm rounding everybody back in. No one's clear.
Okay, I like that because someone knows something.
Yeah, and it's like fresh eyes. You need some fresh eyes. And you don't want that someone to already be ruled out and for you to be like, I'm not looking at them. They're already ruled out.
Right.
That could be the whole missing thing.
Totally.
Private investigator Marshburn strongly believes that the parents were not involved in the disappearance.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Well, if they're not, then I'm sorry that I shit all over them throughout this episode.
Well, you know, that's life. Dior's great-grandfather, Robert Walton, died in June of 2019. So he's no longer alive to investigate, you know, to help investigate.
Oh, okay. Do we know how he died?
No.
Okay.
I didn't look. He was old. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to believe. I'm torn from like everything I found. One second I'm leaning this way, but then I'm like, is Klein telling the truth, or did he get so obsessed with it that he got like too into it and was almost blinded by his passion for it? Or are the parents really sketchy?
But I mean, it was two separate private investigators. It wasn't just Klein. It was the first guy too.
Totally. But I guess my thing is like, where's the jacket? You know, I kind of like want to see proof of the jacket, and I want law enforcement to say something about it. You know what I mean? It's like, that's interesting.
Yeah. I feel like that the police probably know about the jacket and probably have the same amount of proof he does, wouldn't you think? Because like, they seem to be pretty convinced that the parents were involved. So like, he probably turned that over.
Yeah. I just am saying, I want to know if that is an accurate statement, because in one of the videos where Jessica was getting interviewed, she was like, if Mr. Klein has all this evidence, why hasn't he shown anyone? He says he found all these things, yet you didn't show anyone. So it's like, how do we know that you found, you know, the jacket? How do you know that you found the cars?
But how do we know he didn't show anyone? Like, he probably wasn't going to show that to the public, but he showed it to the police. You know what I mean?
But it's like, why wouldn't you? If the parents are saying you're a liar, why wouldn't you show a photo of the jacket? It's like, that's something so easy to then make yourself credible.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just like thinking about how he works with police, and like theoretically they could be like, no, you can't share that. Like, that's evidence. You know what I mean? And he had already like told about it. I don't know. I'm just saying, like, it doesn't seem that weird to me.
I'm just saying, you have to be devil's advocate. You just can't blame everything on the parents when you don't have any evidence, and no one showed any evidence.
Totally. But I guess then, like, why wouldn't the police be like, this private investigator's full of shit, don't listen to him?
They've never backed up his statements on anything he said.
Oh, okay.
So everything he's made claims of, they've never said yes. He made claims about the cadaver dogs hitting five spots. And yes, the police did help him pick the locations, but they never backed him up on that.
Okay.
So
I
it's
see.
Like, they've been involved throughout the journey, but they've never said, we totally back Klein. Like, we believe him. He was just like, I'm gonna do my own thing. And they were gonna help him a little.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, I get what you're saying. I'm not saying the parents are innocent. I normally think the people related are, because it doesn't make sense to be anything else. But like you said, why didn't any of those measures they took find him then? They didn't have enough time, unless it was a way before thing.
I think, obviously, this is speculation, but I think that's probably what happened. I think probably something happened the night before, the day before, or that morning.
Yeah.
And maybe he was never even there that day.
Right. It just then doesn't make sense to me why they would bring the grandpa's friend that, you know, it's like, I don't know, all these things, it just seems like they were either real sloppy, but not sloppy enough, because the body's never been found.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I agree with you that most likely, I think the parents, I'm like, they're still alive and they're still out there. So I don't even want to say that, because
right,
I'm like, if I'm wrong, like,
I know it's hard because you want to say it, because it's like so much of this evidence, supposed evidence, points to them. But then you're like, oh my God. They're like maybe in their 40s. They're both remarried by now. Like, they have their own lives. They're probably still reeling over this, if, you know, depending on what the situation was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's very tricky. So.
Yeah, it's tricky.
Oh, man. That was a doozy of a story.
Oh, I have a little bit more.
Oh.
This is regarding the parents. I just want to break your heart just a tad more. So, what we were just talking about, because everybody believes basically that Jessica and Vernal are the people that made him disappear, they worry that no one is looking for him anymore. On their end, they're still missing a son, and everyone's like, yeah, no, not bothering, because we think we know where he is. But it's like, really, no one knows where he is. I mean, someone does. But Jessica said, I feel like that's been the case for months. I feel like they've already made up their minds that he is deceased, or whatever they think. And people go, oh, okay, well, whatever. And they were able to walk past him. And they could have walked past him. Someone could have easily walked past him in a store. And if somebody has him, I want them to know that we're not going to give up, and we will find him. And it doesn't matter what you do to his appearance, we will find him. And Vernal added, till the day I die, till the day we die, I will find him. I refuse to leave this earth without knowing where he is or what happened at least. At least knowing he's okay. Ugh. So I just have some more cute photos of him. I won't make you look right now because it's depressing.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say that if anyone has any information on Dior's disappearance, please contact the Lemhi County Sheriff's Office at 208-756-8980. And the end.
Wow. Okay. Well, I hope that he is found one way or another, and that if it was not an accident, if he didn't just wander off, then someone is brought to justice.
Yeah. Okay, I hate it. So thanks for joining us this week. Next week is a detour episode. We'll both do a little short story on something in Idaho.
Mm-hmm. In the meantime, if you enjoyed this episode, we would very much appreciate if you could give us a review on Apple Podcasts, a 5-star review. And you can also just shoot us an email at baddrippod@gmail.com if you have any interesting stories to share or just want to chat, you know, whatever.
Throw us like an IM, like MSN message me.
Message me?
Oh my God, Emma, my brain is fried.
Message me.
I think I've been doing homework and research for like 12 days straight.
I mean, it's like 9:30 p.m. That's like late.
No, it's not.
It's late to be talking a lot.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, man. Okay, well, since that's the case, we'll talk to you later.
Yeah, we will see you next week. Thanks for joining us
on this bad trip.